Welcome to the Mother Love Podcast. This is Claire Larson, your host, and this project was made possible because of the support of Healthy Mothers, Healthy Babies, the Montana Coalition. Mother Love was created to promote healing, connection, and shared wisdom through stories. Like any given day spent parenting, each episode brings a balance of tears, laughter, wonder, and surrender. When it comes to parenting, no one should go it alone. On Mother Love, we see you. We hear you. We're in this together. Okay, hi, Mother Love listeners. I'm here with Kate Sexton today. And Kate, I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, because your story is really incredible. And the story of how you became a mom is unusual.
And very,
Yeah, and in a really beautiful way. There are so many parts to what it means for you to be the mother of your little one. Mm-hmm. It comes with a lot. And I think it comes with a lot of things that people don't know how to talk about. And we don't know how to be supportive sometimes. And so that is something that's going to be really helpful. And other families, I think, that are in similar circumstances are so flippin' busy that they don't often have time to have conversations like this. And really, really connect with each other. So let's do that.
Okay.
Will came into your life unexpectedly.
Yes. So I knew Will and his birth mom and had heard that she was having a relapse and CPS wanted to remove him early in the week and there was no place for him to go. So I volunteered and 3 hours later I was parenting a 4.5-month-old baby.
Yes.
Who was not the healthiest.
Yeah. And what was your job at that point in time?
I was a case manager for a nonprofit here in Helena. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what was that first night like?
Overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And after the social worker left, I thought, am I really old enough? Am I capable enough? Mm-hmm. Who thought it was okay for me to be parenting this little baby?
Yeah.
And it was just stuff like getting him undressed because he smelled bad and he was dirty and like, oh my goodness, I don't think I've ever bathed such a young kid before. Yeah. And how do you trim kids' fingernails? And oh my goodness, this kid's so skinny. I don't think you're supposed to be that skinny. And I'll just offer him a bottle on a schedule, I guess, because he's not providing me any cues. And yeah. Calling all the moms I know, like, what do I do for a diaper rash? What do I do for this? What do I do for that?
Yeah, so it was like a major crash course.
Yes.
With learning all the things all at once.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then just even not knowing, like, developmental milestones and, like, what's normal and not normal when you're 4.5 months.
Yeah, because I think even when things go, like, on the natural course, mm-hmm. you know, I still struggle with clipping my kids' toenails. Like, I'm still like, why is this so hard? You know, like some of those things are hard and diaper rash, but it's like you learn as you go. And in your case, you just had to learn it all on the spot.
Yeah.
And right away.
Had no idea. Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't like you'd been reading like what to expect when you're expecting or something.
No, I stopped at Walmart on the way home and was like, I should maybe have some diapers. And change of clothes and a blanket, maybe. I'll grab this stuffy animal and see where we go.
Yeah. Which really, I mean, if you think about it, those are like the essential items that you need. And then if you need to gather more.
He actually still has the blanket and the stuffed animal from that day.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
They're a little rough.
Yeah.
A little rough.
Yeah. Yeah. But because he's 9 now?
He's 9, yes.
Yeah. And so a part of the story that I know but that our listeners don't know is like, you know, why did Will have lack of cues and why maybe was he more thin than usual, and tell that part of the story.
So his birth mother was struggling with substance use disorder, and that relapse that turned out to not really be a relapse had impacted her parenting. Mm-hmm. And I think Will, just from knowing him at that point in his life, was one of the kiddos who was kind of content to starve. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people are familiar with that, but they're the ones who are just going to kind of sit in the corner and be quiet and content. They're not going to scream or fuss ever. So I think his personality at the time, coupled with what was going on for his mom, just put him in a really precarious place. Mm-hmm. I don't think she was getting those cues that he was actually hungry. So I think it was a combination of a lot of different things going on in their just family home.
Mm-hmm. And so that, so I imagine that that first, you know, week or so was probably really, really intense for you.
It was actually the first 2 weeks, because mm-hmm. until that time I hadn't realized it was really hard to find childcare in Helena mm-hmm. in 2014. And I think it's only gotten harder, but I had no idea that you couldn't just like find a safe childcare and drop a kiddo off. So we actually got fortunate and I was able to find him a really good childcare, but it was like 2.5 weeks, and it went from not parenting to 24/7.
Yeah. Whoa. I can't even imagine.
It was, I don't even know how.
Yeah. At that time, you're fostering. Is that
right?
Is that mm-hmm. even though you knew it would be, or you thought it would be temporary?
Yep. So I thought it would be, it was just they picked up on a relapse really fast and that he would be back with his mom mm-hmm. quickly. Mm-hmm. I really, really thought that he was going to go back and it was going to be maybe 6 months tops.
Yeah.
And that it was just a safe place to stay mm-hmm. for a little bit.
Yeah. And you had a partner at the time.
I did. Yeah.
And that was kind of complicated. Do you want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely stressful becoming co-parents. So suddenly it was hard just trying to figure that all out. And what do you, you know, how do you give your heart to a kiddo that may not stay in your house? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people maybe don't understand what it feels like to be a foster parent or mm-hmm. a foster caregiver. And I know it's really different for just like you mm-hmm. could say like, what's it like to be a mom? And you could ask 50 different yeah. moms and there would be some similarities. But for you, mm-hmm. will you talk a little bit about what that was like just in terms of there are certain expectations mm-hmm. and requirements that you have to meet and certain things that have to happen on a regular basis? And mm-hmm. maybe you could share a little bit about that.
So for her situation, I was responsible for making sure Will made it to all of his medical appointments, making sure he was available to be picked up for visits with his mom, which were twice a week. Foster kids in Montana who are under 3 automatically get a referral to Part C services, mm-hmm. and Will qualified for services. So we also had this really great family outreach worker who would come, I don't remember if it was once a week or twice a month, but she would come on a regular basis and assess and make sure that he was meeting milestones and refer out if he wasn't. So he actually ended up with physical therapy. Mm-hmm. So we were seeing her 2 to 4 times a month, and then the physical therapist was coming every week, and then the CPS caseworker came once a month, and then there were family engagement meetings, and I'm trying to think what else. Will had a really sick winter, his first winter, so, you know, that meant I think I ended up missing about 60 hours of work.
Yeah, how was, because you were involved in work, you were a case manager, so how was your work about it? Were they really understanding, or how did that go?
They were very supportive mm-hmm. and kind, and, you know, Will, when he wasn't feeling his best, they would let me bring him in. I had a sling. I'm a big believer in baby wearing because I love it. And yeah. so I did a lot of baby wearing with Will. He had some pretty big emotional upheavals after visits just because mm-hmm. it's a lot to navigate for anybody. Yeah. And so it just made sense for me to get him right after visits. And so I want to say on the Tuesday visit, I would get him at like 3:30 on Tuesday, and then the Friday visit was a morning visit, and so I would get him maybe at noon, mm-hmm. and my work let me flex my schedule around what Will needed. Mm-hmm.
Was it hard for you to keep up with work? Like, I just imagine you were probably really tired and like mentally and emotionally drained just because of like the, even that schedule is just really a lot.
Yeah, sometimes it was nice to go to work and not think about it, but then definitely other times it was all I was thinking about. Yeah. It was always with me, like what's gonna happen, what's going on, especially as it became clear that Will's mom
yeah.
was not going to be in recovery anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
She was still using actively. She got pregnant again. And so it just didn't look like Will was going to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And not knowing, like, what was going to happen between that and the future and loving this little boy.
Mm-hmm.
Still knowing, like, mom is best. You know, adoption, I feel like it should always be the second choice.
Mm-hmm.
Reunification is always the first and best.
Mm-hmm.
For Will, it just wasn't safe.
Yeah.
But that was really hard.
I'm sure.
And that it took a year between when they decided to terminate her rights and when they actually did. And mm-hmm. so for that year, it was so stressful not knowing and being in limbo. And the process is so painful.
Yeah.
Like, it took, I think, 4 months for the CPS worker to get her paperwork done. It took 3 months for the county attorney to file it. Another month or two for a court date.
Mm-hmm.
And then the court date was December, end of December.
Yeah.
And then rights were finally terminated in February.
So this whole time you're just sort of like bonding with this little guy,
yeah.
getting really close. And then you have in your, you know, in your sights, like your future is either going to look like this or mm-hmm. it's going to look really, really different.
Right.
And that must be hard to live with. Just the tension of those two possibilities.
It was very stressful. Mm-hmm. I think it took years off my life.
I
but,
bet. yeah.
I did some really good grief work and trauma work around it. And
yeah.
There was a lot to just let go of and move on. And it was also challenging because Will had a lot of medical stuff going on. And when you're in foster care, the state's your legal guardian.
Oh.
And so you have to track down a social worker to sign for you.
Mm-hmm.
So Will had three ear tube surgeries while he was legally a foster child. And so that was challenging to just coordinate with everybody.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He was very fortunate to have this great social worker who made sure he got what he needed. But it was still like, okay, so he's probably going to have ear tube surgery. I need to let somebody at CPS know so that they can sign the paperwork before the surgery happens. And I have to coordinate. It just felt like coordinating all these moving pieces just to make sure he got what he needed.
Totally. And I know that there's like a moment that you remember when you were driving where like mm-hmm. you just really realized that you loved this kiddo.
Yeah, I was just driving him to childcare one morning and looked back and saw his little face because rear-facing car seat with the mirror,
yep.
you know, all the
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
And just knew in my heart that this little guy was supposed to be my kiddo.
Mm-hmm.
But also knowing at that point, like, he could totally go back. And mm-hmm. that's okay, too, because that would be better. But if he didn't,
yeah.
I was supposed to be this kid's mom. And
yeah. And so probably like from that moment, it was like, even if the other thing happens, mm-hmm. like every single day that you're with him and that you're caring
yep.
for him, like you're
mm-hmm.
his mom.
Yep.
And that's supposed to be how it is.
And I very much believe that as the foster parent, I was the grown up.
Mm-hmm.
And this little kid needed all of my heart and all of my love, just as if I had given birth to him. And if he went back to his other mom, I could deal with my feelings,
mm-hmm.
but he could not deal with not having a caregiver who didn't give their whole heart to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I gave him my
so
whole heart.
Yeah. You did. And
so.
And word on the street is that he still has it. Like, you still do that every day.
I sure try.
Yeah. You know, after it was established that their reunification wasn't going to be mm-hmm. happening, and did you know, like, right when you learned that, were you like, okay, well then I'm going to pursue adoption? And
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know we talked about this, but like, it was a day of like, yes, officially this, but it didn't really change your
right.
life a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
But did you have like a moment of celebration?
We
with
had
the
a
people?
Big
yeah.
old party. I think
yeah.
there were like 30 people in the courtroom for the adoption ceremony.
Oh, that's so cool. And so how old was Will at that point?
He was, let's see, it was 2016. So he'd been three.
Mm-hmm.
Almost three.
Yeah.
He was so funny. He got up and when you are adopting somebody, you have to swear in. And so we swore in, and he was like miffed because he didn't get asked. And he was like, I'm Will. Like, looking at the judge, like, what about me?
That's awesome. Yeah. So. Yeah. So that happened. And was there like a sense of relief?
So 2 weeks later, I was at work and we're just talking about different like processing and just different things we'd experienced. And I don't even remember exactly what happened, but it was like this huge physical release. Mm-hmm. And then about a month after the adoption, I took him into the doctor and they're like, he's going to need another ear tube surgery. And I was like, okay. So I got in the car and was like ready to call CPS and like get it all started. And then yes. I was like, I don't have to call them.
Oh,
and I just
cool.
like lost it in the I car bet. Seat, but I'm trying not to like be too loud because Will's in the back mm-hmm. seat and
yeah.
he's like, what's going on? Yeah. Mom? Just
yeah.
really happy.
Yeah.
He's like, okay.
Because you had gotten so used to like gearing up for all yeah. those logistics and communications mm-hmm. that had to happen.
Yes.
That's so awesome.
So I cried then too.
Yeah.
It was just so much easier.
Yes. So we all have moments.
Yes.
Where we have to go, oh man, mm-hmm. rewind, yeah. repair. And you had one of those
I
recently.
I did. Well, it was when Will was four. Yeah, four. So explanation, not excuse. At this point in life, Will had not slept for 6 months. So, and I really mean that. Like he would wake up every hour and a half. I get him back to sleep. I'd go downstairs.
That gives me like a visceral reaction.
Mm-hmm. And he was yeah. having awful night terrors. Like he'd wake up screaming.
Yeah.
It was awful. So tired. Got some news about what was going on for him that was hard. And instead of dealing with it in a healthy way, I take him to a therapist. And I just mentioned that I was frustrated by his mom's choices. And Will was in the room. And it came out of my mouth, and I knew immediately that it was not something I should have said. And I was just like, oh, fail. And the therapist was so kind, but was like, we don't do that here. I was like, I know.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Such a hard moment.
And, you know, it didn't seem like Will was paying attention. But I knew once we got in the car, I wanted to check back in with him and apologize again. And so I got him in his car seat and was talking to him. And he asked me this question. And I don't even remember what the words were, but what he meant was, if you can't love my other mom, how can you love me? And it was one of those just like, oh,
yeah,
moments as a parent. And I thought about like, I have, but I will continue to try to move mountains for this little boy.
Yeah.
Like, of course I will love his mom, other mom. But I have to mean it. Like, at this point, I have to choose to love her wholeheartedly for the rest of my life. And it can't be something I ever go back on. It has to be something that I mean right now and forever. And I did. Mm-hmm. And I do love her. And I am so grateful for the little boy she created. Yeah. There are times I want to find her and hug her because I think it must be so hard.
Totally.
But yeah, it was such a big question for a little four-year-old to ask. And
do you remember what you said to him?
I think I apologized first. I was like, you know, Will, what I said in there wasn't okay, and I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
And I love your mom. I love her wholeheartedly, and I always will, and I love you mm-hmm. forever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because he was four, he was like, oh, okay, Mom. And, like, picked up his, like, picture book
moving
and started.
On. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But those are, like, those hard moments. I've had so many of them where it's, like, for me, it's a very clear choice of, like, do I want to feel guilty and ashamed and, like, a terrible mom? And do I want to go down that long, dark, mm-hmm. dead-end road? Or do I want to recognize, like, okay, I feel guilty for a reason. I made a mistake.
Yep.
You know, I can choose to mm-hmm. repair this. And sometimes you can't do it right then,
right?
Depending on what has happened. But like the practice and the commitment to like, if I mess up and if I say something or do something that has hurt my kiddo or scared them, or it's a wound, it's a rupture, right? Like mm-hmm. it is important to be like, okay, I might not be able to do that right this minute, but like, we're going to go back and talk about mm-hmm. that. And we're going to do that. And it's not like this is rocket science, like I'm stating the obvious, but like, I didn't see my parents always do that for us, and I didn't see them do it for each other. And, you know, I didn't grow up seeing what that looked like and what that felt like to have someone who was so close to me come and say genuinely, I'm so sorry. I totally messed up.
Yeah.
And like doing that is giving them permission to do that in the future. And I think that's one of the most like undervalued skills we have is just accepting that we messed up and that we can either deny it or feel terrible about it or try to overcompensate for it, or we can just be honest about it.
Yeah.
And it's a huge thing as a parent.
And I knew in that moment, like, it was the scariest repair of my life. I just knew deep down, like, if I don't do this right, it is a rupture I will never be able to repair fully. Mm-hmm. I was just, like, gripping the steering wheel, like, oh my gosh. Like,
but being able to recognize that, I mean, that says a lot about you and just your ability to self-reflect even in that moment. But there are moments as a parent when you do know, like, ooh, this is a big one.
It's scary.
And oftentimes, I don't know about for you, but oftentimes, like, I know it's a big one because something similar happened in my own childhood where I remember that it didn't get repaired. It didn't get tended to. It didn't get the recognition or affirmation that it needed. And it's like, okay, I know what happens if I don't recognize and repair this. And I don't want that to happen.
Yeah. And I did not want Will to feel unloved.
Of course.
And that's what he needed from me. And so...
Yeah.
Like, of course. Of course, little buddy.
Yeah. Good job.
So, well, I nailed that one, but
it's an ongoing practice. Yeah. That's how it goes. And then I know that kind of as Will grew, there were some things that changed in your own life, took you to a different part of the country.
Yeah.
Maybe we can talk about that because I honestly, this is one of my favorite parts of your story is just the healing that you were able to kind of commit to.
Will's dad and I got divorced and we moved, and Will and I moved to Tennessee to be close to my family. Will, around 4 and a half, it felt like Will's brain went to take the next step and the scaffolding for the next developmental step wasn't there. And so he stopped sleeping. And we ended up in therapy appointments 7 times a week. And then I was like, and I'm going to be a single mom. Like, I can't do all this. So we moved down to Tennessee to be with my family. And one of the nice things was we were right there next to Vanderbilt Children's Hospital and were able to get all of these medical things that I was trying to figure out for Will done in one spot instead of driving to Kalispell and Billings and Bozeman and all these different places. And so that was nice. Got a lot of answers pretty quick. Maybe not the answers I wanted, but, you know.
Yeah, but still probably the same answers you would have gotten, but you would have had to drive, like, who knows how many hours overall to get to all these appointments.
And, you know, one of the places was neurology, and Vanderbilt has, like, the first or second neurology pediatric clinic in the nation. And so it was just nice to be in that level of care. And you know, like, we ended up in a children's hospital where, like, this art therapist came and played with him while we were there for an overnight EEG. And they were like, what movies do you want? And do you want to play some video games? You can have chocolate ice cream, whatever you want. And he's, you know, just living it up.
That's so awesome. I feel like when kiddos have to go through that much, that those many medical, like, all the tests and all the things, like, they need a little bit of, like, a culture that really supports them. Chocolate ice cream, you know, like, that should be a thing in OB offices too. But that'll be for a different episode.
Actually, one of my proud parenting moments is we would drive by, you could see the children's hospital from the highway, and we would drive by, and Will would be like, Mom, when are we going to go back to that hotel again? I really want to go back there and have some more chocolate ice cream and watch some movies.
Yes.
I was like, yes.
You think that's a hotel. Perfect.
Yeah,
that's cool. It must have been a relief, though, to be able to get a bunch of answers to really big questions at one time in one place. And then you guys were there for
a year. 13 months,
And you did a lot of your own healing during that time.
So I took a whole long year where I just did I feel like therapy and self-reflection and a lot of body movement. One of my favorite people in the whole wide world is my sister, and we were sharing a house at that time, and she was just so supportive and kind and would just ask thought-provoking questions and held space for my feelings. And so, yeah, I just spent a year, I felt like grieving mm-hmm. and trying to parent and help Will while he had all of these feelings on top of all the things going on. And yeah, it was an interesting year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's so big. When things get really, really hard, you know, sometimes you have to get really, you have to expand your imagination mm-hmm. of what will support that. And sometimes that looks really, like, sometimes that looks like moving home with your parents.
Yeah.
And you never thought you would do that as an adult. Mm-hmm. But, like, it turns out that that's going to allow a bunch of stressors to fall away
yes.
so that you can focus on what you need to focus on. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I think that taking that time for you to really address yep. your grief and your healing and mm-hmm. what you needed, like, I can't imagine a better scenario.
Yeah.
Than to have like that support system around you so that when you and Will emerged from that,
mm-hmm.
like you so knew, like you had your own tools and
yes.
your own healthy coping skills and you could model that for him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and just you've been able, from what I know of what you talk about when you talk about mothering Will,
mm-hmm.
like you're just able to set such a solid example for him
yep.
of what a healthy person looks like. And yes, you're not perfect. I'm
no.
sure none of us are perfect, but
no.
you know, we don't have to be perfect. That's
no.
part of the thing, right?
Exactly. And you know, one of the things Will and I've talked about is, you know, he still tries to process, is like, Will, I believe that it is better to have divorced parents who are happier on their own than to have two parents who are unhappy. And I can give Will so much more as a healthy, happy mom that I could give him in my first marriage, because we just, you know, our life paths took different turns and that just happens.
That just happens.
And
yeah. And sometimes it takes a divorce to realize mm-hmm. that there are a lot of unaddressed wounds and there
yeah.
are a lot of things within us that need,
mm-hmm.
you know, they need attention. And so I think that's so huge. And I think that that is a really, when I was growing up, you know, when my parents got divorced, like
mm-hmm.
no one talked about it. It was still like, oh my gosh, like your parents are divorced. Like back
mm-hmm.
then it wasn't
right.
as common.
Mm-hmm.
And so there wasn't language around that. And there wasn't,
right.
it was just a whole different deal.
Mm-hmm.
And now I feel like it is true a lot of times that, you know, if you can be who you are and fully stand in that
yep.
for your kids,
mm-hmm.
then like, yeah, there are like other hard things about it,
mm-hmm.
but that's the most important thing,
yeah.
really.
And it's just, for me, reframing, like, yeah, it's hard. Let's talk it.
Mm-hmm.
Talk through it. Let's work through it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what we wanted for you.
Yeah.
But it's what we, all three of us, got.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just make the best of it.
Yeah.
And Will is such a motivator for me to try to be healthier, right? Like,
yeah.
physically, like, that little boy needs so much exercise that I was like, I have to get in shape to keep up with this kid. I can't
yeah.
keep up with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, I need to be centered and I need to be well
mm-hmm.
so that I can provide him and be in that space
mm-hmm.
of kind, no-nonsense tenderness
mm-hmm.
and the bigger, stronger, wiser kind from Circle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, boy, especially
yeah.
before medication, the little boy could just go and go and go and go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I spent most of my day trying to wear him out, honestly. Like,
yeah.
let's swim, let's walk, let's bike, let's...
yeah. And it's amazing to think about, like, you realize that and you recognize it. And so it was like you had to rise to the occasion of his needs.
Yes.
Right? And although, like, over time, you're like, okay, this is also a medication issue.
Yeah.
Like, this is something we need some balance in. But
mm-hmm.
but that's, like, what his mom would have wanted to be able to do. But she wasn't able to choose
no.
to rise to what he needed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I know that when you talk about Will's mom with him,
mm-hmm.
you talk about just she wasn't able to keep
right.
you safe.
Yeah, she, you know, we talk about she loves you. She always wanted you. Nobody taught her how to be safe, so she doesn't know how to be safe for her or for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an issue of you, Will. It's just the way it is.
Yeah. It's like, it's a safety thing. Mm-hmm. And I think kids can understand that. And there are so many ways that you could talk about that. But I think that that's such a beautiful, simple way to keep it, you know, so that he can really understand that he is lovable and loved. And I think that's so important.
Yeah. My advice for any adopted parents would be plan that talk out. Because we were just driving home from the grocery store singing along to Moana when out of nowhere Will was like, is my other mom dead?
Yeah.
And I'm like, ooh, okay, let's
turn this down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the things I appreciate about my parents and his grandparents is, you know, even early on, they were like, okay, so what's our narrative? Like, we don't want to leave Will to make up his own story. How are you going to talk to him about this? If he brings it up, we want to say exactly what you say. Like, our whole family has a shared narrative.
Yeah.
Because I just don't think kids should be left to create their own narrative around this kind of story. And so,
you know. Yeah, I think that's really wise. And I'm sure, and it's, like you said, smart to have everyone on the same page with it.
So. Yes, because we'll just ask questions sometimes.
Yep. Yeah, totally. Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you came back to Helena.
We came back to Helena.
What happened next?
We came back to Helena because we missed it.
Yeah.
A lot. Will and I did not enjoy the humidity or the busyness, and it was, I didn't realize how spoiled we were in Helena with trails and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I met my now husband too.
Yes.
And thought, this guy's special, I should come back. And so he and I joined households like 3 weeks before COVID happened. And so we went from me and Will and him and his kiddos to a family of five every other week during COVID.
All tracked in too. Yeah.
Wow. I want to say we moved in like February 28th of 2020.
Yeah. So you don't do like transitions like slowly or gradually.
No. We just go all in.
You're like the crash course queen. You're like, okay, and now we will learn how to have a blended family all under one roof.
During COVID.
During COVID when the world seems like it might be ending and we're not allowed to go anywhere. Yeah.
So yeah, we went from just one thing to another. I am happy to say we've had no major changes in like almost 3 years now.
Hey, look at you guys.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. And how was it with, I think blended families are another thing we don't talk about very much, but that's a set of extreme circumstances. But what were some things that you guys implemented in terms of helping all the members of the family kind of adjust to that big change?
We talked about it before it happened, like, you know, each family talked about it with their people, and we all talked about it together. You know, we made space for kids just to be kind of honest. You know, and sometimes there was feedback like, we just really need time with this, with our parent. Awesome. So supporting that. We like to do a lot of camping, and so we made it just a goal that when we camp, we have my husband and his kiddos in one car, and me and my kiddo in one car, and that way we get like all of that one-on-one time, just trying to be really intentional about listening to what the kiddos need and want.
And
to be honest though, his girls are amazing. Yeah. And I am just so lucky to be part of their lives. And
yeah, that's awesome. And it's probably been really cool to watch their bond with Will. How's that?
Well, Will, it's really, they are very kind people. Sometimes Will is such a little brother.
Yeah.
There have been times where I missed it, but my husband was telling me that he was just sitting and rocking in our recliner, and he said something and just looked over at their teenagers, looked over at the teenagers who immediately were like, wah, just like reacted, and he just sat there and rocked with the biggest grin on his face. So there are those moments, and they'll tease him back, but they'll also teach him stuff, and I'm thankful for them and the way that they help him.
Yeah.
Just model that good, appropriate behavior and cheer him on.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And the 16-year-old especially can do no wrong. Like anything she does, he's like, well, I got to do that too.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. So you've been back in Helena for 3 years.
Yes.
Amazing. And Will is in public school.
Yep, third grade. That's Central. They are so good to him.
Yeah, Central's good. That's where my kids go too.
And they're so nice.
They are so nice. I feel really grateful for that community. And I will say that when COVID hit, like, it was, for me, it was, yes, it was really overwhelming to suddenly have school mm-hmm. at home.
Yeah.
All the things. We all know this. But but I remember going to pick up my kiddos' like yes. belongings from school, and I had no idea that that would be emotional for me. But like, I hadn't seen, you know, the principal, and I hadn't yes. seen the Lisa, the front desk mm-hmm. amazing person, hero. Like, I hadn't seen them in a long time, and then suddenly, like, standing there with all of them, and like, they were like handing, I'm gonna cry right now, like, they were handing everyone, like, I remember it was right after St. Patrick's Day mm-hmm. that the schools closed, so they had all made like these leprechaun traps, and I remember like them handing me this giant leprechaun trap and like leaving the school and not knowing like when, if ever,
yeah.
we were gonna see those people mm-hmm. who had become such an important part of our family. Like, this is kind of a tangent, but like, it, I think it just is, I've come to realize that like, it's not, they're not just teachers, they're not just yeah. principals, like, these are part of our village. And yes. suddenly my kiddos lost all those relationships, and I lost all of that communication between like mm-hmm. how's Kyla doing in this, and how yes. you know, it was like a huge hit mm-hmm. and it made me appreciate so much
yes.
just having all of our different little communities like that, that you kind of just forget how important it is.
It was, yeah, I was like, I was never meant to be a teacher, and that moment just really reinforced yes. it. And
yeah,
it was so, Will's a very routine oriented kiddo, and it was so devastating for him. Like, it,
I bet.
We ended up in mid-April of 2020, I just told his teachers, like, we can't, like, we're just gonna take 2 weeks off. Mm-hmm. And Will and I are just going to try to,
like, regroup.
Yeah, be yeah. okay.
Yeah.
We're going to walk down to Spring Meadow uh-huh. and social distance and put our toes in the lake. And mm-hmm. that might be all we do today.
I think that was a lot of just, like, trying to live this new crazy demanding mm-hmm. life. And everyone was feeling like, uh-oh, this is not sustainable. And it was really hard. Yeah.
And I feel like Will was reflecting how everybody felt, but nobody was willing to say
yeah.
through his behavior. And it was this great invitation mm-hmm. to be like, wait, like, everything just changed. We're in the middle of the pandemic. Like, no, I'm not going to go to work.
Yeah.
I'm not going to work from home. I'm not going to teach whole school. Like, we're stressed out and grieving, and all of a sudden the rug just got ripped out from us. Yep. Like, we're going to pause.
We're going to just be that in the mm-hmm. nothing more. Yeah.
Yep. And so, actually, yeah. 2020 ended up being just this awesome summer for Will and I. We had a lot of fun. I worked for the state at that point, and Governor Bullock had, I think it was 40 hours a week he paid. Like, they did it so government workers who didn't have childcare could still receive pay. And mm-hmm. so I could find childcare for 20 hours a week.
Yeah.
But the other 20, I just stayed home with Will. Yeah. And we just really, we had a rough couple of years mm-hmm. and we were actually just had like fun mm-hmm. and relaxed, and like, his medication was perfect mm-hmm. and we were just able to enjoy life.
Yes. Yeah.
And we did.
That's amazing. And there were yeah. golden moments during that time too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Will can probably still rate the different sands and mud from all over the state about which one's best. And
that's awesome. Yeah. And so I know that Will is on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And that's also something that we haven't had a chance on the podcast to have a lot of parents talk about what that's like. Mm-hmm. But maybe you could just share a little bit about what that looks like, you know, for medical attention yeah. and what it looks like for adjustments that you make as a mom, what public school looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the spectrum is so large and wide mm-hmm. and varied. And, mm-hmm. you know, for Will, trying to think of all the ways he qualifies. So it's the social interaction. Like, he just needs some support with reading cues and interacting. And he can get a little rigid, like mm-hmm. it's Will's way or mm-hmm. there's no other way. So it's a lot of social emotional learning just like you would teach math or reading. I think back to my childhood and it just kind of came naturally.
Yeah.
But for Will, it's stuff like, okay, I need you to pause and look at my face. What feeling do you think I'm feeling? Mm-hmm. We also have feeling cards and these things called Kimochis, which are little feeling plush circles.
Cool.
With different faces and the word on the back that somebody at Pixar like created. So they're super fun. It's things like visual schedules because it's hard to hold information. I think Will's early childhood experiences plus the ASD, just like routine, is really important. Mm-hmm. Having a sense of what's coming is really important. Mm-hmm. Another positive from COVID is we had all kinds of chances to practice flexibility. Mm-hmm. And so before COVID, changing plans was overwhelming. Ruin a day, kind of overwhelming.
Yeah.
Like if we went to Target first instead of Safeway first, like it was really hard to get back on track. So just a lot of work around flexibility too. You know, school involves multiple teachers, social skill classes. We do this great thing called Q's Club in the fall and spring, where he goes and practices with other kiddos. Like they have a lesson and they learn a social skill and they practice it together. And
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Is that out of central school or is that something different?
It's some speech therapists in the community who put it on.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's neat.
So, I mean, for him, a lot of his stuff meant things like we're going to OT and PT and speech and behavior therapy and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now he's at a point where he's like functioning pretty well in his classroom, yeah. Right? And mm-hmm. Things are going well.
Yes. Yeah. He's
heard doing he was well. The star of a recent Christmas holiday program.
Oh my
program.
Goodness. He made me cry. He knew every single word to both of his Christmas songs for his class. And he was just up there radiating. Like, mm-hmm. I was kind of worried his face was going to split open because he was smiling so big.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those moments when mm-hmm. we see our kiddos do that stuff they've worked so hard on.
Yeah.
It is emotional. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What cool. Things that's hard for me as his mom, though, is just everything for Will is just a little bit harder mm-hmm. than the average kiddo. And that's just, it's hard. That's not what I want for him.
Yeah.
And just trying to, you know, like we do the same goodbye routine every day when I drop him off at school. And this year, our big thing is, what do you tell yourself if something's hard? I tell myself I got this. Mm-hmm. So trying to like really build that resilience and perseverance, and just because it's going to be a little bit more mm-hmm. for Will than
yeah.
maybe the kiddo sitting next to him.
Yeah. And I remember you saying that one of the hardest things that people say to you is that he's so lucky.
Yeah.
Right? And maybe you can talk a little bit about how that perception, like, although it's understandable, just mm-hmm. how hard that is for you to hear.
Yeah, and I heard that a lot, especially when I was fostering him, mm-hmm. and I didn't have the emotional space to think of, like, how to redirect that at the time, but it just broke my heart because no foster kid is really lucky. Mm-hmm. Like, they've lost their primary attachment and their connection, and then some bad things had to happen on top of that for them to be removed. And so it's just all loss and grief. I got a 4.5-month-old baby who was grieving because he lost his mom.
Yeah.
He's not lucky.
Yeah.
At all. Mm-hmm. He had a lot of hard things happen to him.
Yeah.
And I didn't ever want him to feel like it negated the connection he had with his other mom.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
There's just grief and loss for these kiddos, and they're not lucky.
Yeah. Are you able to, like, vocalize that now if someone were to say that to you or say something like that? Or are you just sort of like, okay, they don't get it, and then move on?
You know, I don't get it a lot anymore.
Yeah.
I think it's just been so long since mm-hmm. it happened. And,
mm-hmm. and how are Will's, like, does he have really good buddies that he's met in his journey?
He talks about some sometimes, but again, with the autism mm-hmm. and sometimes navigating friendships, it can be challenging. Mm-hmm. I think he has some good friends at school. Mm-hmm. His favorite has always been other little girls.
Yeah.
He He's pretty cute. And they've always been a little friendly. Yeah. Like, follow him to the gate and be like, bye, Will.
Oh, that's sweet.
I know.
Yeah. Do you see him? I think one of the coolest things is, like, when we do try to teach our kids healthy coping skills and then we're mm-hmm. able to see those come out. Like, do you see him actively saying, like, I got this, or teaching other people to say, or like telling you, you got uh-huh. this? Yeah.
So one time I said something to one of our cats and Will goes, Mom, you just made a bad choice. He's not a bad cat. And if you tell him that he's a bad cat, he might really start to think that. And that's not okay. Yeah. You need to apologize.
Yeah.
Because we talk about there's a difference between, like, your choices and mm-hmm. whether you're good or bad. Like, you make a bad choice, doesn't make so. Mm-hmm. Yes, I have gotten lectured on different things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yes, he has also been like, you got this, Mom. Go.
That's awesome. Yeah. And what does he love to do? Like, I know he's really active. Does he have, like, favorite sports or?
He loves to swim. He's in Taekwondo. He has a little kayak that he likes to get on and go around the lake on mud, like anywhere we can find, like, a beach.
Yeah.
He is just so happy.
Yeah. That's awesome.
He likes to be read to. We're on Harry Potter Chamber of Secrets.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exciting. Oh, it's so fun. It's so fun to watch them grow up and get into different things. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes he grows too fast.
Yeah. Yep. I get that. Well, gosh, what else should we talk about, Kate?
I don't know. I think those are the highlights.
I know. Let's talk about the work you're doing now, because you just worked really hard.
Oh, yeah. Will helped, was supportive in my family of me getting through nursing school. Mm-hmm. Going through nursing school and parenting and making sure Will got to his appointments was interesting. It takes a village.
Yes. Yeah. And how's it going? How's nursing going?
It's good. I'm back at public health and working mm-hmm. with pregnant and parenting folks. And
yeah. And so does the everything you've been through with Will and your journey of becoming a mom, mm-hmm. you know, when you're doing your living your everyday life and are having interactions, especially working with, you know, people you do in public health, like, how does that sort of transfer over?
So from my experience, especially with Will's home visitor, I just believe that every mom deserves a home visitor.
Yeah, amen. Or like seven.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we'll start with one.
Yeah. And even just, like, being a parent, you just, like, I'm a nurse, and there are times where I'm like, oh my gosh, what is wrong? And I take them in, and they're like, it's just this. And I'm like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. it is. But as a parent, I think you just need reminders, because mm-hmm. it's your person, and you feel, it feels so big. And parenting has been such a humbling and compassion building journey for me that I want to help other mothers feel, like, that self-compassion. Like, mm-hmm. your kid's still here. You offered them food. They're clean. You've taken care of them. Mm-hmm. You showed up. That is, like, all you had to do today.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's so huge. And it's always, like, people always can sense if you're just saying that or if you've been there in that day just trying to get through, mm-hmm. you know. And it's always hopeful when you can tell, like, oh, mm-hmm. she's saying that because she's been here.
Yeah, I mean, there were days where with Will, it was like, okay, he was offered food.
Mm-hmm.
He got his bath.
Mm-hmm.
He still has all of his fingers and his toes. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to say that was our goal for the day.
That was our goal for the day.
Everybody's still alive.
And we nailed it. We crushed it.
Maybe.
We did it. Oh. Yeah. And what, I guess, if you could offer any words that might help a new parent or someone who's been in your shoes or anywhere close to that, what would you say?
Oh, I think I would just say, I'll take you out for coffee and listen. Mm-hmm. And you just tell me whatever you need to tell me that you don't feel like you can tell anybody else.
Yeah.
And if you need to cry or be angry or whatever it is, safe space.
Yeah. I think that is the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it can just be such medicine to be able to speak our truth.
Yeah.
There's
just no certainty as a foster parent.
Uh-huh.
And so you're just, I mean, you were living every single minute, not really knowing what's going to come next. Yeah. And so that takes its toll. Or at least it did for me.
Yeah, good.
So just, it's okay to feel whatever you feel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just do your best to show up for that little person. Love them with your whole heart.
Yeah. I think that's a good place to end.
Okay.
Good. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you to our incredible editor and producer, Brooke Boone Miller, for sharing her gifts with us. She's a mom, and she gets it, and for that we are so grateful. If you are seeking supportive parenting resources, please visit hmhb-lifts.org, an online guide meant to connect Montana families to services and programs throughout the state. It's okay not to be okay. Help is within reach, and you don't have to go this alone. We promise. And if Mother Love speaks to you as much as we hope it does, please consider supporting this project by subscribing to the podcast, sharing it with your network, and or writing us a quick review. We are passionate about getting these stories out into the world, and we need you to help us spread the word. Oh, and just one more thing. We know a lot of moms who are really fired up about creating change in the maternal healthcare world. If you feel inspired to make a donation to this movement, please go to hmhb-mt.org/donate or click the link in the show notes. Even just a $5 or $10 donation can make a huge difference. Imagine a future where mothers and caregivers feel supported, seen, and heard as they carry out the most important work of their lives.